Thank you very much for inviting me, and let me say hearty good morning to all of us. Indeed, I'm happy to be presenting this as from the late 2005, I was posted to Queen Adugu District as District Medical Officer. But something happened when I went there. Within a month or so, a lady was brought on a stretcher. She had been 4 days in labor, and we took her straight to the operating theater. Just as we were getting ready to do the surgery, she died. And for me, that was unacceptable, and that was the wake-up call for all of what we are seeing now with this presentation. This is just a disclosure, sorry. And for those who do not know where Sierra Leone is, it's on the west coast of Africa, a small country of about 6 million population. And then Queen Adugu District happens to be that one, the largest district in terms of size on the northern fringes of the country. And this is the terrain. This leads to one of our health facilities. It's a mountainous district, and the terrain is very rocky. You can see the ambulance bringing in a pregnant woman to hospital. And the roads also are very monstrous, and there are dangerous bridges there that are made from palm tree logs, and these cause most of the areas to be inaccessible for several months in the year. For the health indicators for Queen Adugu District, really the indicators were undetermined, but they were supposedly higher than the rest of the country because that was the most backward part of the country, and the high parity of women also there. There you will see women who have given birth to 16 children with only one or two alive. And you see also the high prevalence of HIV. It is the highest with all the 13 districts. Queen Adugu District happened to be the highest. And then you can see here the functional peripheral health units that were scattered all over. Now, the problem that they had there, as I already said, is that most of the maternal deaths occur among unregistered cases and then illiterate, and among those people who come from far-off places and they reach the hospital in a moribund condition. This was especially so the story for this particular district I'm talking about. Now, there have been several conferences, world conferences, that have focused on reduction of maternal and child deaths and whatever, you know, like the Nairobi conference and then the London International conferences. All of them have expressed the need for countries to develop country-led maternal, newborn and child health strategies or whatever. But the thing is that things have not been working. We say a lot of things at global level, but at that level, things have not been working. The problem persists. And this is because this huge gap between global attention and community-level action is because of the poor operationalization, as I will see it, of maternal and child health care, especially in the community. And with this problem that we face, we thought, as McKinley said, there was a need to focus upstream. This was like what we have been doing is seeing people drowning in water, fishing them out, giving them artificial respiration. And by the time you finish, there is another one drowning. So much that there has not been time enough for us to look upstream and see who was pushing them all in. We needed to do that. And so this became our focus. And so what we did in that district was to form a maternal and newborn care working group, which comprised of everybody, NGOs, the district council, DHMT members, and that working group was mandated to prepare a plan of action. This is the 5-point plan of action: advocacy for bylaws to prevent home deliveries, community education and mobilizing regarding need for family planning, supervised pregnancy and childbirth, service improvement, there's timely referral and transportation, and then monitoring and supervision. We thought that if we follow this, then definitely we'll be able to create some impact within the community. And so the process was, number one is community meetings with everybody, for the leaders especially, to enact bylaws. And then also we did radio phone-in programs. This was very important. Although we knew what we wanted, but we wanted the community to tell us, so that at the end of the day we would tell them, you told us to do this. That is why we're doing it. What we did was, I would sit in the radio and give them a rough statistics of how many women have died within this period and ask them, how do you want us to combat it? And then they will communicate to us. And then also we went into the creation of birth waiting homes, because we thought if all the women should come into the health facility, then the health facility will become overwhelmed with patients. So that was where we went to the creation of birth waiting homes. This is just a simple home, as you can see, which serves as a waiting place near the peripheral health unit for pregnant women who come from afar. This is where they wait until they deliver. And so when we spoke about this, communities decided to either offer houses for us to house these women, or some immediately went about constructing, as you can see here, because it was their idea, it was their everything, so they put all their attention to it and their energy to it. We even got the women who were very keen to assist with the construction work by even fetching water for the work. And the traditional bath attendants, we are now forbidden from carrying deliveries on their own. They were given uniforms and told to come and work in the bath waiting homes. They now play an active role in the dissemination of information, and they also play a vital role in the monitoring of the use of ITNs by the pregnant women. And now, in fact, what we are training them to do is to deliver family planning to the communities for us. But they shouldn't do the deliveries on their own. And formation of pregnant women support groups. Now, this comes from the idea that we health workers are usually prone to teaching when we come to the health facilities. But here we say we identify pregnant women who have had successful deliveries and whose children are healthy. We tell them to come and teach each the other pregnant women. So they have we call it, it's like a club of pregnant women where those who have been successful go to teach each other. They share their experiences and then they learn from each other and give each other mutual support. And then, of course, the strengthening of the referral system, installation of radio, because this is very important, radio communication set and an ambulance service. And then also the institution of what we call the savings and loan schemes. Now, the savings and loan schemes come from the fact that everybody, however poor we are, we have a minimal amount that we can do away with for a certain regular period. So communities ask, how much can you do away with? Some people say $1 a month. We say, fine, can you form clubs of 30 or 50 people and put that $1 a month in a box? And then whenever there is an emergency, you open the box and then you can give a loan, a compulsory emergency loan without any interest to whichever woman is in danger. But then what happened was this graduated into even education. Their girl children are now going to college. They pay for them out of these funds, and then they give loans for agricultural purposes, but these ones give an interest. Now, it was simple. In the village, it was difficult for them to keep money. So what we came back to the drawing board. We said, if we want to keep money in the village, we need to get a box with several locks on it. And so one individual has the keys to one lock. So if you have three locks on the box, not one individual can open, and the box is kept by a fourth person. So, and those individuals who have the keys are usually the old grannies who are in the villages. They do not go anywhere. So as a result, villages have a lot of money that they use now to do a lot of other things. If you see here in 2007, just four groups here, if you divide this by 4,000, you will see that they have a huge amount of money, because this is about $9,000 to $10,000. Just one chiefdom of over 30,000 people have this amount of money for their emergencies. So they have so much money and they are using it now for a lot of other things. And of course, the training and equipping of the staff, and also the establishment of safe blood services. In a district where it is predominantly Muslim and people are backward, there are several myths about blood donation. There was a lady that was brought to me. I told them we need blood, and people said, she is going to die. If I give my blood, it means she will die with my blood. It means part of me has died. So this is how people are afraid of giving blood. So, but then we did a lot of intensive community sensitization for donation of blood to the blood bank, because if you want to do all of this, it will be heart-rending to bring a woman to hospital and there is no blood to give. It would have been better to leave her to die there in the village. So it was important for us to do something on blood. And then all hands on deck for emergency operations. With this, what you see here is that, as I have already said, bringing a woman to hospital requires that you do a lot for her. So what you see here is myself here with no technical staff there, but with lack of electricity, we were using torches to do an obstructed labor, a cesarean section, but the woman survived. This is how much you need to do if you really want to succeed in some of these things. And then you see the bath waiting home in Sinkonia. See the total number of cases that have been admitted there. These are the normal deliveries. But the important thing we need to see is that all of these are complications before delivery, and all of these are complications after delivery. But interestingly, from this year, 2007 to 2011, there are zero deaths. No woman died from this particular community. And we look also at the hospital, the main referral hospital. From 2006 and 2007, these are just 2 years, the C-section rate increased. But if you see, there are only four. This was because women were still being born late, but you actually see that from 193 to 316, a lot of women have received cesarean section here, and a lot of them receive vacuum deliveries here. But so you see how much of them we were able to save. And this is a testimony from one of the ladies where we visited just about 2 or 3 weeks ago. She said, I was admitted to the Cinco near Bathwaite Enom a few weeks before I was due. I developed complications but was treated. I delivered safely and my son is here with me as a testimony to the fact that the Bathwaite Enom really helped her to achieve one of her dreams. And some of the constraints are these, like lack of funds to equip the Bathwaite Enoms, inadequate staff, communication, and incentives, and of course the blood, other things that you need for the transfusion of blood. So among the lessons learned is that the participation of all of the partners was really very important. When we had all of the counselors, everybody coming on board, then of course we were able to achieve what we did achieve. And then also one other key thing that we learned here is a gradual move towards skilled attendance at birth with no obvious resistance from the traditional birth attendants and other community members. This was very important because usually when you want to put a law and say the TBAs are not supposed to be doing deliveries anymore, then they start to resist and start to go political or whatever. But with this type of scheme, we encourage them to come. And initially, in fact, even before the introduction of free healthcare, what we did was every pregnant woman that comes to hospital, of whatever fees she pays, 50% goes to the traditional birth attendants that that refer the woman. And now also, with the free healthcare, women are not paying anymore. But we've gradually introduced the performance-based financing, in which what we are doing here, we pay the health facility for whatever deliveries that occur there. But then we are encouraging the health facility staff to give 50% of that to whatever TBA that refers a pregnant woman. So definitely, we are not supposed. We hope that we won't see any problems, even with the shift in strategy that we are doing in the country now, and. The way forward is that the maternal and newborn care working group was to embark on intensive mass sensitization to promote contraceptive use. I mean, this is very important now, as I say, and then develop messages to promote more active roles for husbands in pregnancy issues to enable them to plan early. Then extension of the loans and savings schemes to other chiefdoms, and then completing and equipping of the Bathwaite Enom unit. Now, the emerging opportunity we have now is that we have the success in Koinadugo district have attracted the attention of the First Lady, because she has what she called a WISH framework, that is the Women's Initiative for Safer Health. And the concepts that we have described here have now formed part of this WISH framework that she is helping to scale up into the rest of the country. And as I say, this is herself and myself when we visited some of the areas where I can call them the project sites. And with this now, she is well equipped with the knowledge for her to be able to scale up to the other areas, as already mentioned. I want to thank you very much, for this is especially what we hope, that our situation will be healthy women giving birth to healthy babies in our country. Thank you very much for your attention.